A strange spiralling white light was spotted in the early morning sky over Sydney, with even sceptical witnesses wondering if it was a UFO.
They were last seen on the beach with a tall man, and that's the best description police have ever had of him.
More than 17 years after Harold Holt disappeared into raging surf at Cheviot Beach, his widow has finally revealed his last romantic words.
Shocking, terrifying, mesmerising. That's the way a number of Australians have described their alleged encounter with the Yowie.
It's time for the Weird Crap in Australia podcast.
Welcome to the Weird Crap in Australia podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Soule. Joining me for another episode of the Weird Crap in Australia podcast is a researcher extraordinaire herself, Holly Soule.
Researcher of the Weird Crap in Australia podcast.
Now, did you just award yourself an award?
No, you said Weird Crap in Australia podcast twice, so I figured that I'd add it on too.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Of course, you know you're listening to the Weird Crap in Australia podcast because this is a podcast. It's called Weird Crap in Australia and you're listening to it. So I need to stop being so redundant.
There's a little bit of weird, a lot of crap, but all of it happens in Australia.
This is true. Just a trigger warning on this one as well. The next three episodes are going to be very rough. We're going to be dealing with child sexual abuse. So you're forewarned. Now, before we get into it and everything gets really sad for hours on end, because this series will probably take a few hours, I finished my second pass on the book today on volume two of Weird Crap in Australia. And then on top of that as well, editor extraordinaire herself, not Blake this time, Veronica Hunt, Holly's mum, of course, my mother-in-law, has also finished her pass on the Weird Crap in Australia Volume 2 manuscript. So
Mum is an actual qualified editor.
She is. I mean, you've edited for Fees as
yes,
well.
Yes, so but I don't have a certificate. She does.
I don't have a certificate either. I just had a lot of time on my hands. And it was time to take care. It's always good. You always, when you need to do, this is what I found. And I got this advice from Stephen King's book, which is, I think it's just called On Writing, isn't mm-hmm. it? He says, finish your manuscript, put it away for a few months, pull it back out, then start editing. And it's a really invaluable tool. I did my first pass on the manuscript, handed it over to Holly, left it for a few months. Yeah, a few months later, you handed it back to me and then I was able to do the second pass. So like I've said in previous podcasts, I think this book is better than the first one. And that's not just me trying to hype it up. I actually think it is better written than the first one now that we've had a little bit more practice with this, and it's going to make a really nice addition next to volume one, and is bigger.
Mm-hmm. Heavier.
And what's really, really exciting is we actually have our first brick and mortar store now. We're working with Impact Comics in Gramina Place in Canberra. They're going to be stocking the Weird Crap in Australia books. They have a couple of copies of volume one already. That's in Canberra if you want to pick that up. And if you can't make it into store, they do mail outs, which is really cool. And for the first five customers who walk through those doors, we've left a couple of little surprises. Just little surprises.
It also counts if you ring up and order the book to be mailed out to you.
Yeah, there are five little surprises to go with five books. So the first five customers to grab those books, boom. You're going to get yourself a little surprise. Don't forget as well, if you would like to pre-order the book, you can shoot mail your orders now, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, you can start with pre-orders are open. He'll take those orders, we'll fulfill them, and he'll take care of the rest. So
I'd like to point out, you looked at me. I don't know what Mel intends on doing.
I mean, you were standing next to me when we handed off the first load of books. But yeah, I'm sure he'll take those orders for us. Pre-orders for Weird Crap in Australia Volume 2. If you want to get that through Impact Comics and you don't live in Canberra, shoot them an email through to info@impactcomics.com.au.
You've said that way too many times.
I have indeed.
Or written to it way too many times.
I have indeed. I've done a lot of ads for those guys over the years, both in my capacity at Fairfax Media and through various podcasts that I've worked with them on. Weird Crap in Australia Volume 2. Pre-orders are live. Yay. That's really exciting. Comes out September. All right.
Now we have to dive down into the deep depression again.
Yes. Now we have to take away the jovialness.
Because for some reason, Matthew decided that the roaring 160s were going to be depression, although I think the first slot was my fault.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it is what it is.
You're the reason that it was on the list, so yep. I blame you.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, the two most depressive subjects that we've covered this year. Well, I mean, We've covered a lot of depressing subjects, but definitely the Cliff murders were my idea, and this is my idea as well. So this is episode 166, Australia's Secret Shame, the Child Abuse Scandal, Part 1. There's a lot of good reasons to actually start talking about this. The Royal Commission, which we're going to talk about a little bit later on in this episode, only happened what? To 2017, it was finalized.
The report was finalized in 2017, yep.
So we're 2021, so 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
In those 4 years, the religious elements in this country have not learned their lesson and now are demanding specialized treatment through the, what do they call it, the Religious Freedom Act? Is that what they're trying to push through?
Yeah.
Of course, they're only 4 years off the back of one of the worst child abuse scandals in Australia. So I think now is a great time to actually remind everyone.
Why shouldn't let the religions have their free reign.
Yeah. Why they should not have special exemptions. And some people have accused me over the years, and I just want to state this now. I think it's important to say. I am not... people have described me as fundamentally atheistic. And that's perfectly fine if that's the descriptor people use for me. But I want to make it quite clear, I have nothing against the personal practice of religion in your home, in your church.
It's the institutions that we have a problem
with. It's the institutions, it's the corruption, it's the lack of accountability, and it's also, your rules are your rules. If you're religious and you choose to abide by those rules, that's cool. I abide by civil laws, which are, you know, if I murder someone, they're going to throw me in jail. I don't hold any prejudice towards religious people. I just like accountability. And, you know, I've got friends who are devout Catholics. I've had over the years Muslim friends. I've got friends who are religious, who aren't religious, who have weird, mixed up, crazy spiritual religions that involve gods and meditation or some shit. I don't know, some new agey crap. But ouch. Regardless. No, that's not you, Holly.
No, I'm a completely different problem.
Holly just still believes in the Egyptian gods, and that's fine, you know, to each their own. But yeah, so I just want to make, you know, if you have that knee-jerk reaction, oh, they're going to come after my religion, they're going to come after me because I'm a religious person. I promise you we're not, but we are going to kick the Catholic Church in the guts over this one. You know, in my opinion, they deserve it. So, let's crack into this one, Holly.
Over the next few podcasts, we will attempt to tackle one of the largest ongoing criminal conspiracies that Australia has ever seen. A conspiracy so large that it involved every level of government, police, and touched the lives of nearly every Australian. Over the next few weeks, we will explore just how the Catholic Church and similar institutions managed to perpetuate the decades-long abuse of Australia's youth, as well as the heroes who attempted to fight back.
And that's important to note. There are heroes in these stories, and we're going to talk about a couple of them over... So yeah, there are good guys in these stories as well.
As with most things European, the Catholic Church arrived with the convicts on the First Fleet. Members of the convict Catholic congregation in Ireland were aboard the ships that arrived on our shores, and with them came God, or at least the vast organisation that professes to be its spokesperson. 10% of all convicts that landed on Australian shores were Catholic specifically, while a good 90% were of some Christian-based faith. Of the 10% of Catholics, half were born in Ireland, with the other half born from Irish immigrants to either Scotland or England.
What's interesting about this as well, the origin of Australian Catholicism, which, like you said, Holly, comes from Ireland. The Irish have been in a decades-long divorce now with the Catholic Church. They've had their own child abuse scandals.
Everyone has.
Everyone has. You're 100% right. Canada right now, there has been the burning of Catholic churches on native lands because they've found mass graves of native First Nations children. And so a lot of these churches, which is situated, some of them on reservations, they're burning them to the ground. And honestly, I can understand the sentiment. Ireland went through something very similar. They found mass child graves as well.
It doesn't surprise me. By 1803, 2,086 Irish convicts, of which the vast majority were Catholic, had landed in Botany Bay. In Australia, priests were only sporadically available for the convicts to preach their faith. By 1830, about 10,000 Catholics inhabited Australia. 374 were actually adults who were not raised with access to a priest, but who had Catholicism pressed on them by the society around them anyway.
Well, how does that work exactly, though? Because if you're not aware of Catholic doctrine, you can't actually confess your sins to God directly. You need a priest as the intermediary.
I'd say that instead of having an ordained priest, they had an elected priest in their little area. That's what I would assume.
The most holiest man in the group of men.
He who is without the least amount of sin.
I only slept with 20 prostitutes this week.
I've killed 2 people. Yeah, all right, you're the smallest. All right, off you go. Up you go. Convict priests, including James Dixon, arrived in the colony after 1800, 12 years after the first convict arrival. Dixon himself was granted a conditional pardon and permission to lead Mass in Sydney, Liverpool and Parramatta on alternating Sundays, which took place from 1803 to March 1804, when a convict rebellion in Castle Hill led to Governor King withdrawing the privileges. Dixon returned to Ireland soon after.
Which in and itself is an interesting move, because usually you use, you know, faith in order to, you know, control the masses.
Faith is a tool of control.
Yeah. And it's also interesting around this point too, you've seen a resurgence and an organization in Catholicism. We're not that far removed from one of the last waves of the Black Plague. And during the Black Plague, the church was turned on very, very quickly, because people felt that the plagues, wave after wave after wave of bubonic plague, was due mostly because God was angry with humanity. And so the problem was for them that the priests were also dying of plague and couldn't seem to help stop it. And so people started moving away from the church, forming their own sects and, you know, forming their own different versions of the church. Like, you know, religion once again became a private institution as opposed to this massive organization that had failed them.
Well, from memory, that's where things like Protestantism, that was the era that came out, going like, well, if you're supposed to be the holiest of us and you're dying because God hates us, then obviously you're not at holy and you're leading us down the wrong path. We're going back to the base material. Thank you. Fuck you.
And what's also interesting about that era too is that the people that had survived were sometimes very young and very corruptible. So this if you want to really pinpoint this corruption that would embed itself within the Catholic Church, it's really about that point, because you end up with the worst of the worst. A lot of the times they survived the plague, and so they were what was left of the church, because a lot of the time they would empty those coffers and they would get the fuck out of there, wait for their town to die off, and then they would come back later.
There's also the problem that with so many priests dying, there wasn't enough left to actually commune with God, so they had to grab any layman they could and try and train them up, which brought in unsavory elements and helped to corrupt the church.
I just listened to an amazing 5-part of my last podcast on the left on the Black Plague. If you're curious, go read it. It's absolutely, read it. Go listen to it. It's fascinating.
Mass was not actually legally celebrated in Australia again until Father John Joseph Therry and Philip Connolly arrived in 1820. Their arrival is often regarded as the formal establishment of the Catholic Church in Australia. At least two Catholic schools were established in the first decades of the 19th century. However, neither survived very long, and it wasn't until after 1820 and the arrival of Therry and Connolly that the idea of Catholic private schools really took off. By 1833, 10 Catholic schools spotted the country.
Until the end of the 1860s, Catholic schools received some government assistance under a variety of schemes. The campaigns for free, secular, and compulsory education had begun in 1850s, and it became increasingly clear that Catholic schools would not be able to rely on government aid for much longer.
And that comes from Church in Australia history from the Catholic Australia website.
Why was that? Because now it's the opposite, where there is a lot of funding for private schools, be it Catholic or other religious institutions.
The problem with government and with people is that they're very trend-followy. So if you have a lot of people who are rebelling against the church, a lot more people will rebel, and it'll build this free, secular, and compulsory education trend, for example, or the separation of church and state and stuff like that. And then once everyone gets scared and starts reverting back to God, that's when the Catholic Church rises again.
Yeah.
It's like a phoenix. I suppose
it's an ebb and flow, isn't it?
It always has been, yeah. Between 1872 and 1893, the colonies passed laws to cut and then finally remove aid to church-run schools. With no money to pay actual teachers, the bishops appealed to their religious orders in Ireland, and the Irish Catholic Church started sending out funds and people to continue the work started by their Australian religious brothers.
Gotta get them young. Gotta get them young. Very important. Gotta get them young. Get them indoctrinated.
What's the quote from Dogma? It's like, oh, like smoking. Oh, Christ, if only we had those numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Something that I don't like as well, and I've also been very vocal about this over the years to anyone who'll listen, which is usually me yelling at just an empty dark room.
And you guys who actually tune in to listen.
I don't like the indoctrination of children. Children aren't capable quite yet of making decisions. We make decisions pretty, you know, top to bottom, we make decisions for children. The only exception is religion, and I've always found that quite a strange proposition. I think if, you know, a religion is truly something that can stand up to scrutiny, then it should be something that adults could actively seek out in their lives, as opposed to, you set a child down and you go, well, your parents are Catholic or Anglican or Jewish or Hindu. Islamic or et cetera, et cetera. So that's what you are. I've also got issues with indoctrination as well.
I feel like it should be like one of those job fairs where they all set up a booth and they have to talk to everyone.
I like that. Yeah. Like, you know, and they have
preach.
To, yeah. Okay, what's your religion about? And it's like, oh, well, you know, we're Hindu and we believe this. And you go over to the Catholics and all the different churches would have to compete for your love. Man, I like that. That's a good idea.
This definitely needs to be a thing now.
You know, it's like
religion fair.
Do you think Batman would have been in your religion? Oh yes, we love Batman in Catholicism.
Batman stands for justice. He's definitely part of our. Yeah.
Jesus was kind of like Superman, and you've got young Matthew. You've already won.
A few religious orders existed in Australia by the 1880s, the Sisters of Charity, the Good Samaritan Sisters, and the Sisters of St. Joseph, which was founded in 1866 by Father Julian Tennyson Woods and Mary MacKillop, who will get her own episode.
Yes, because she's Australia's only saint, isn't she?
First and only.
Yeah, yeah. And this will probably piss people off. It's iffy, isn't it? Isn't it always iffy with these people as to exactly what? Because what's her miracle?
I don't remember. All I remember is that she definitely got fast-tracked.
Because you have to perform a miracle in order to be sainted?
I think you have to do three.
Is it three?
I think it's three, but I haven't looked at it in a very long time, so I don't remember.
Yeah. But yes, you are right. She will get her own episode at some stage.
Mary MacKillop's Sisters of St. Joseph, known as the Josephites, ran 35 schools in the Adelaide Diocese by 1871. That's a lot of Catholic schools.
It's probably most of the schools in Adelaide at the time, which is known in Australia as the
church capital.
Yeah, church capital. It's just all beautiful buildings though. When we went to Adelaide for a convention a few years ago, for a pop culture convention when we were still doing content for the Modern Meltdown, we did a little tour of Adelaide City, and it is amazing to see some of the oldest buildings in Australia are there.
I've always liked looking at churches. It's just the atmosphere of them makes me freak out because they're creepy.
It's always weird with me. I get a little bit steamy and a little bit hot under the collar, and I've never understood why.
Never actually gone inside to see if you burst into flames?
Too scared.
By 1880, there were a total of 815 religious sisters from all orders teaching in schools. By 1910, the number exceeded 5,000. So in 30 years, they hit more than 4,000 extra sisters. These orders established little parish schools all over Australia, providing a Catholic education for the children of the bush.
Children of the bush. Matthew, sounds like a cheap porno.
Would you like to translate what that actually means?
My interpretation would be take the native population and try and indoctrinate them by force.
Bingo! But this was paraphrased off the Catholic Church website, so I had to use their phrasing. The largest of the male teaching orders, the Christian Brothers, had 115 brothers teaching in 30 schools around the country by 1900. We will actually cover more of them later because Matthew has given me an idea for one of the stories. The World Wars ended up becoming a motivating factor in the battle for numbers, which is the lifeblood of any religion. In the 1950s, the Catholic Church received a boom in the number of people attending Mass and subscribing to the faith. This could possibly be as a direct result of their families being delivered home from the wars safe, or maybe because they weren't.
Wars are a difficult one. There's a lot of accounts during World War I of people losing their faith. They believed that, you know, humanity had now basically, like, if there was a God, how could the God allow that to happen? You know, there's a lot of accounts of soldiers on the battlefield who were like, you know, I've completely lost.
God has abandoned us.
Yeah, God has abandoned us. You know, there is no God. I've lost my faith. But to that same extent, there's also an equal number of accounts of people who became even more steadfast in their faith. You know, it's kind of interesting, the human psychology. For one man, you know, faith is what gets them through. For someone else, the rejection of faith also gets them through. You know, we just, it's all a tapestry, Holly.
And that's my problem with organized religion. Believe what you want to believe. See what you want to see. New parishes were opened, and along with it came schools founded and run exclusively by the church.
Many parishes were established in the new suburbs of the major cities, and the number of priests, sisters, and brothers continued to expand. The impact of all the effort expended on education was felt as Catholics made noticeable advances in socioeconomic status, drawing near to the Australian population as a whole in educational attainment and prosperity.
I'd like to remind everyone that 1800s Australia was not really a very literate place.
It's a shithole.
Ned Kelly had to dictate all of his famous letters to one of his gang members because he couldn't read or write.
Because he was dumb.
He wasn't dumb. He was just uneducated. You should know that.
This is true. This is true. I shouldn't have said that. No, it's, and look, I'm not that far removed from illiteracy myself. You know, there are people very close to me, like only like one or two generations removed that were illiterate. And when I was, I think it was maybe year two or three, my teachers pulled my parents aside and said, your child has a learning developmental disorder, something along those lines, and he's never going to be able to learn how to read.
But then you learned.
Yeah, look at me now, fuckers.
All right, books.
And I wrote that. I think I've written that as part of the acknowledgements in my second book. Our second book, I should qualify that. I wrote two comics that have both been successfully funded this year. So yeah, I think I'm doing pretty good for the illiterate dumbass with the learning disability.
Because of the extent at which Catholicism in their schools spread throughout Australia, the basic literary rate of the Australian population started to rise. So that is one good thing I can ascribe to the Catholic Church.
Yeah, well, you need to know how to read your Bible.
Not necessarily. Until 1960, the Bible was read only by the priest and all Mass Latin. Was given in Latin.
Yeah, the reason for that is so that your priest can control. So there are no other interpretations other than the one that's been directly given to you.
Dictated.
Systems of control. Systems of control. Oh, that phrase keeps popping in my head and I don't know why.
Oppression control. Church-based social groups opened up, allowing parishioners to socialize and mix. So the Holy Name Society for men and the Sacred Heart Sodality, I think it's Sodality, for women. Being a Catholic was suddenly a badge of honour amongst people, a club membership of sorts, and there wasn't that much that being a Catholic couldn't do for you, except if you wanted to eat meat on Fridays, because that's a Catholic rule.
I have an atheist friend of mine who goes out of his way to eat meat on Good Friday, and he posts up, he's like, he goes out of his way, he gets the best cuts of steak, cooks them all up. And I know that, like, his wife is, you know, she is religious, and he is definitely not.
So there's photos of her just standing there glaring at him?
Pretty much. She's like, I'm praying extra hard for you tonight.
I'd like to point out, Catholicism, you're not actually meant to eat meat on any Friday.
At all.
At all.
Ooh. I wonder how Australian Catholics feel about that, because Australian barbecue, man, that's like-
Most of them happen Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
They mustn't be Orthodox then. Because Orthodox Catholicism, and then there's, you know,
Australian.
Yeah, there's Australian Catholics.
Which is half-assed at best. The Catholic community had grown to be what the Irish bishops of the 19th century had worked for and dreamed of, a thriving society engaged with church based on the Irish model. Barely a decade later, this would change. With the 60s came an influx of non-English speakers to Australian shores, including Catholics that hailed from Italy, Malta, the Netherlands, Germany, Croatia, Hungary, and other places still troubled by war, famine, and corruption.
Not to mention the huge number of prisoners of war that we brought over and people who escaped from World War II.
Mm-hmm. And the Korean War that was going on, and the ramping up of the Vietnamese War, and there's always a fucking war.
Yeah, well, we would establish centres overseas to start taking in Vietnamese refugees. A good friend of mine, that's how his parents arrived here.
Mm-hmm. These non-English-speaking Catholics had different experiences of Catholicism from the way the Irish founders had practiced their religion for 180 years. Not in the least, they were used to attending Mass held in their own languages. The church adapted, obtaining and ordaining priests of the same backgrounds, and building schools and churches for the newcomers as fast as they could. What you're seeing now is the Catholic Church splintering. Then, in 1962, the Vatican II Council changed the rules of Catholicism. Now, we actually covered this a little bit in the Pebble Cult, and I got really lazy and I just copied it over.
I don't... to feel about this one, Holly.
Why?
Because I don't know if we should be quoting ourselves.
No, we should. We are now, according to some of our listeners, an authority on some of this shit. So,
I suppose
we've spent enough time reading it.
I suppose we've written two books, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So,
more than some historians.
So, what makes this special as well? This is a little sneak peek of the second book.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You're getting it here first. Between 1962 and 1965, the Vatican II conferences were held in order to discuss and implement changes to the Catholic Church's dogma, a change that many traditionalists and fundamental churchgoers found troublesome. Some of the changes included that the altar was turned around to face the people, not the cleric in charge, so they became one with the flock instead of leading it. Mass was no longer held in Latin, but in the local language, again allowing everyone equal access to the word. Women would no longer be required to cover their hair in church, as was traditional. The church also set the Declaration of Religious Liberty, meaning that the church itself passed up the opportunity for preferential treatment in particular governments, especially those that would repress other religions or aid in financial or legal support for the Catholic Church. It was a big deal. That, you know, we go into it more, obviously, in the book, and if you want to know more about that, head to an episode about the Pebble Cult. I can't remember what number.
The Pebble Cult's really annoying because it's like 79, 80, 82, 83, 84, because the Christmas episode was right in the middle.
That's right. Yeah, we separated it up. But yeah, Vatican II was a big deal because it was a reformation of the religion. If you've ever met a Catholic, you know they are very traditional people and they don't like change. So you could only imagine the idea of reforming a religion that had not seen reform.
Well, it hadn't seen reform since like the 800s.
Yeah, not to this sort of scale. So it really upset a lot of people. It made them feel like their religion had changed without them. It made them feel abandoned. And so that's exactly why you had the rise of like the little Pebble Cult and things like that.
I'd also like to point out to our current reigning parliament that the church specifically at this conference said that it did not want preferential treatment and it did not want the funds.
Just saying.
So take your religious whatever the freedom fuck it bill. Is and stick it up your ass. Signed, Catholic Church. These changes disturbed a lot of everyday Catholics. Cults and offshoots began to form, and followers began to splinter off into their own prayer groups, retaining their own form of worship of Catholic dogma. Since then, mass attendance rates have fallen, and the numbers of priests declined quickly, their average age rising even faster. Some Catholics saw these changes as either a tragedy that the bishops couldn't stop from decimating their parishes, or as a conspiracy they've been happy to promote. I don't know what the logic behind that second half is, maybe the priests are trying to work less, but seeing their life's work float away with dwindling congregation numbers is surely not what they actually wanted.
Yeah, it's an odd one because without those numbers, they don't have a job. So I'm not quite sure why people postulate that conspiracy theory, but I have, like, even outside of your research, Holly, it's not the first time I've heard of it,
mm-hmm.
where they're actively trying to dissuade members. And I
that makes no sense. They need the money from donors to actually live.
Yeah, no one's ever explained that one to me, so I'm just as confused as you are.
We have another quote here from the Catholic History Church.
Old forms of devotion like the rosary have nearly disappeared, but there has been a growth of interest in alternative forms of prayer borrowed from a variety of cultures and traditions. An array of leadership roles were once the preserve of priests and religious in education, healthcare, parish life, and many other fields, has been filled by laypeople. And laypeople, by no means all Catholics, comprise virtually the entire staff at Catholic schools and the majority of students at Catholic theological colleges.
The masses have taken over. The Catholic Church blames falling attendance rates on the changing of the dogma with the Vatican II conference in the 60s. However, any student of history can see the dark underbelly swelling beneath the international Catholic Church and its arm in the Australian social life. Here is where it's going to get rough. I'm going to supply a trigger warning here because this is where it goes from history into dark shit.
Also, I'd like to say, like, that was fucking like 60 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They can't still be blaming a change in dogma 60 years ago. That's like four generations of people have come through at that point.
This is a church that's 1,700 years old. 60 years is fucking nothing.
Yeah, I get that. But like in the speed of modern society, how quickly society changes and evolves these days, especially spurned on by collective thought on the internet.
But the Catholic Church does not.
Yeah,
it's the word of God, and the word of God does not change.
I mean, it is changing, though. Like, the current pope is probably the most...
he's fucking progressive as.
Comparatively
to previous, yeah.
Comparatively, yes. Like, there's still very problematic shit that he says, but he is open to including homosexuals back into the Catholic Church. Which,
he said, go get vaccinated. Gays are okay. We love everybody equally like Jesus told us to do.
Yeah, so there's some good shit there. You know, credit where credit's due. He's,
but he's still an old Catholic.
He's more progressive than most.
Around the world from the 1950s onward, but concentrating irrationally into the 1970s, children were being preyed on by pedophiles embedded in trusted positions in society. This wasn't specific to the Australian arm of the Catholic Church. Children in the USA, the UK, Ireland, Canada, and other societies found themselves confronted with an increasing number of sexual attacks on children. However, while individual families may have stood up to the attacks on their children, if the children were brave enough to discuss it, that is, it was not unheard of that members of higher standing would sweep events under the carpet, intimidating or paying people to stop talking about the issue and moving on the accused priest to simply reoffend somewhere else.
Speaking of progressive popes, the previous pope,
Benedict,
good old Benedict, aka Ratzinger, I think was his name. Ratzinger was part of the Hitler Youth when he was a child.
True progressivism.
And during the height of pedophile priests all around the world, and this is an important thing to understand as well, this is not just a localized conspiracy to Australia.
It was literally an international conspiracy.
It was an international criminal organization conspiring to continue to abuse children. The previous pope to the one they have now was one of those bishops who would move pedophile priests from parish to parish to parish to parish. Now, if that gives you a disgusting sinking feeling in your guts right now, don't worry. That just means you're still human.
Attacks here in Australia have been documented here as early as the 1950s, but if you go looking, you will definitely find them a lot earlier than this. So we'll start in 1958.
A scoutmaster in suburban Dandenong told senior figures at the Archdiocese of Melbourne that Catholic priest Kevin O'Donnell was molesting boys. The church allowed the priest to continue running parishes and assaulting children for another 35 years. Assistant priest Father Anthony Gillain observed Father O'Donnell engaging in inappropriate behaviour with a young boy in the presbytery bedroom, but he later denied the allegation.
And that comes from the ABC News.
Just think about that for a minute. Just think about the veil of secrecy. That it is so tight and these monsters are so well protected that even when one of their own calls them out, they're still protected. That's just incredible to me.
In January 1971, a police officer, Detective Dennis Ryan of the Victoria Police, attempted to prosecute Monsignor John Day for his assault on boys. Senior church and police have since been accused of impeding the investigation and later destroying Mr. Ryan's career. This is cited as an incident in the Catholic Mafia activities, which we'll discuss later.
Yeah, we're going to discuss that entire case from start to finish, really. Detective Ryan is a fucking hero, true hero, who did the right thing and was punished by his fellow officers because they were all Catholics.
Mm-hmm. I think he was too, but he didn't want to stand for it.
No, he didn't. He did the right thing. He was courageous and he fought and he lost everything. Like I said, we're going to talk about just the hero that he was, but that's going to be in probably part two, I think, is when we cover Ballarat. Yeah.
Monsignor Day ended up being transferred around Victoria, where he continued to offend.
Several prolific pedophile priests and brothers, including the notorious Gerald Ridsdale, assaulted children freely across country Victoria. Dangerous schools included St. Apis Primary and St. Patrick's College. Ballarat Bishop Ronald Mullockins and other church officials received complaints about Ridsdale and other priests, but the offending clergy were moved from parish to parish to avoid further scrutiny.
And that's Mullockins, by the way, Mullockins, so you know for next time.
Mullockins. What a piece of shit.
On April 14, 1978, Father Michael Glennon was the first priest to be convicted and jailed for his sexual assault of a 10-year-old girl, serving 7 months in jail. The church kept him employed, and this decision was met with anger and disbelief from the parishioners, whom disagreed with the decision at the time and afterwards.
And also, have a real think about that. 7 months for molestation.
No, sexual assault, so it'd be worse than that.
Sexual assault, he got 7 months in prison. 7 months. Again, if you feel like shit right now, it's okay.
It's not
your. It just means you have a conscience still.
It's not you we're attacking, it's your religion. On December 6, 1985, broadcaster Darren Hinch publicly identified Father Glennon's criminal past and incited parents to drive him away from their families. Hinch was jailed for contempt of court, as Glennon was actually standing before the court on more charges at the time, and it was feared that a mistrial would be caused, as it could be claimed that any jury on the case would be biased due to this broadcast. It wasn't just the Catholics who were being drawn into the spotlight with all this crap, however.
One thing about that incident as well, Hinch was wrong to do what he did, because we all have to, everyone is innocent until proven guilty.
Mm-hmm.
The court system needs to be as unbiased as possible in order to function correctly. So I understand his compulsion, mm-hmm, because in those similar shoes, I would be wrestling with the idea myself. Yeah. So I understand where Hinch was coming from, but I also understand that the integrity of our court system also has to be protected so that convictions stick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people forget. It's not about protecting, well, it's about maintaining that everyone is innocent until convicted. And then you have to make sure that those convictions stick. And if it can be proven that a jury was acting in a biased manner, convictions can be overturned and monsters can be back on the streets. It's a complicated issue and it needs to be examined from all facets.
We have another case here for Matthew to read.
December 18, 1990. Police began investigating Kevin Guy, a teacher at Queensland Anglican School Toowoomba Prep, for his assaults against students. Guy died by suicide. One of the victims, Lindell, sought acknowledgement and help from the Anglican Church, which failed to provide any assistance.
And on it went. Victims continued to stand up to report the abuse that was happening to them, and the police began to slowly turn on the church, leading to a snowball effect of charges and prosecutions. Victims started suing the churches that were supposed to protect them, and in the early 2000s, the fight against the church and its protection of pedophile priests started making news around the country. Repercussions were felt all the way up the chain.
May 26, 2003. The fallout from the case involving Kevin Guy and Toowoomba Prep and a subsequent inquiry forced the resignation of Governor-General Peter Hollingworth, who was Archbishop when the abuse occurred. Oh, suddenly a connection to politics. What a fucking shock. Oh, what another shock. Conservative politics. What a shock. It's not like all these powerful assholes are all in bed together abusing the most vulnerable. That isn't going to happen. They're here to protect us.
We definitely haven't uncovered a few different rings of that happening around the country over the decades at all.
People wonder why I'm so pissed off all the time. It's because I do a history podcast.
If it was a future podcast, you'd be optimistic. History is depression.
The moon's wobbling. I read about that the other day.
Yeah, but future is like lasers and guns and spaceships and aliens and all the fun things, whereas history is just depression, suicide, genocide, death.
As I've always said about aliens, right, there's a big fucking sign that floats around the earth that we can't see. It says, leave the dangerous, violent monkeys alone.
Get the fuck out while you still can.
Yeah, don't land here. Danger, danger.
After many condemning reports coming from all over the country and from all walks of life, not just religious leaders, but youth group leaders, teachers, and so on, Prime Minister Julia Gillard called a royal commission into the child abuse on November 12, 2012.
Now, this wasn't just something that happened at spur of the moment.
No.
It was like every week a new report was coming out. It just could not be ignored anymore.
The rate built and built and built to the point where it was like coronavirus footage now.
It was like two or three stories a week. Mm-hmm. It just kept cut. Like it was just this snowball of report after report after report. Julia Gillard did the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they still had to placate to religious groups. They were like, we're going to investigate everyone. But don't worry, Catholics. We're going to investigate everyone. And of course, this is on the back of all these other investigations. Ireland had had their investigation.
America
had started investigating, you know. And it didn't end with us either. Now Canada is going through the same thing.
I wouldn't be surprised if New Zealand starts popping up with their own, if they haven't already.
I'm sure one day they will as well. Like, it's just, it's symptomatic of a global criminal organization.
The ones who focus purely on power. It's a control issue.
Power and abuse.
The terms of reference laid out for what the Royal Commission into Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse, which I'm just going to call the Royal Commission from now on because fuck that, was intending to do this.
Inquire into institutional responses to allegations and incidents of child sexual abuse and related matters.
The span of the commission was not lost on those undertaking it, who stated in their final report,
when the Royal Commission was appointed, it was apparent to the Australian government that many people, possibly thousands, would wish to tell us about their personal history of sexual abuse as a child in an institutional setting.
One of the things about this Royal Commission that a lot of people were angry about was the fact that it was only 5 years and they were only given this much funds when people knew there was a lot more going on than this shit.
Yeah, but you got to remember at the time there were conservative elements within the government and that are now in power today who wanted to stop this from happening. There were people who are currently serving as politicians in the Australian Parliament who were against the uncovering of child abuse. Let that really sink in. Really sink in.
But most of you can choose exactly which side of the aisle they're on.
Yeah. Do your research when you vote. It's so important. So important. I'm not telling you who to vote for.
Check everyone.
Check them out. Check their history. We have the internet now. Very easy to do.
On June 30, 2014, an interim report was filed with the Australian government. Volume 1 reported on what was done and how, as well as where the report still needed to go. Volume 2 held 150 sample stories collected by the commission at that time regarding incidents that had happened. That's a sample. That's not all of them. These de-identified stories were used to underpin their conclusions and the effects these incidents had on the victims involved. The commission was to sit for another 5 years and examine everything on the history of Australian child abuse, ranging from the 1920s to the modern era. Now, a little side note here, they did consider older cases, but anything more than the 1920s would make those making a claim at least 90 years old, which makes first-hand accounts at the time from those victims problematic due to cognitive decline.
Yeah.
So
it's hard to remember shit when you're 90s that happened to you when you were a kid.
30 and I still don't fucking remember.
Yeah. There was also a lot of crossover too between the reports into the Stolen Generation, and there was a lot of crossover because
a lot of shit happened to those poor kids.
Yeah, First Nation Australian children were also subjected to this abuse as well. So, you know, they did definitely set a time period for a specific reason. It wasn't to exclude anyone, but they needed, you know, conclusive data, basically, to reach a conclusion.
Yeah. These older cases were considered as part of the history of the Stolen Generations, the White Australia policy, the 10-pound POMS policy, the orphanages opened under the Spanish flu, and more further back in time to the establishment of the European colonies on Australian soil.
Yeah, the 10-pound POMS policy is basically where orphan British children were sent in huge numbers to Australia.
Given 10 pounds and told, here you go, that's your life now.
And then disappeared.
At least that's what I heard.
You know, when we covered the Beaumont children,
mm-hmm.
We talked about, we very, very briefly covered it, and we will cover it, you know, when we can get our stomachs and our courage back again.
We are nothing if not willing to uncover the acrid underbelly of this fucking country.
Absolutely, because it needs to be said. These stories can't be forgotten.
You can't just bury them.
No, you can't. So, looking at that as well, there were a lot of British orphans, some who were forced to Australia, almost in a similar fashion to the Stolen Generation, whose parents travelled to Australia to try and find them, and they found no trace of these kids at all.
That wasn't all of them. There were some that did, because I'm pretty sure I know a 10-pound POM. I just can't remember who it was. I think it was my grandmother's mate.
Like I said, there are people who were found,
yep.
But there were some who just disappeared.
The use of these older cases is more of a context to the modern cases, as it's hard to see a pattern when you're only looking at the surface. The final report, released in 2017, was a massive 17-volume undertaking, as well as including an executive summary. Now, I have some highlights, if you want to call them that, of the report here, so we're going to get a little bit statistical. 4,000 survivors reported to the Royal Commission, covering 1,691 different religious institutions. These included schools, orphanages, churches, presbyteries, missions, confessionals, and so on. The perpetrators of the sexual abuse inflicted included priests, brothers, sisters, ministers, church elders, teachers, workers, and youth group leaders. There were a lot of people within different religious institutions that knew what was going on, but few did anything about it. Other authorities decided to ignore victims and perpetrators, and they were treated leniently. They were shielded and concealed. There was a focus on the preservation of religious institutions' reputations above all.
Above the safety of children. Think about that. These failures are not confined to religious institutions. However, the failures of religious institutions are particularly troubling because these institutions have played and continue to play an integral and unique role in the lives of many children.
That's from Final Report, Volume 16, Book 1, page 11, if you want to go look it up. Once you start looking into them, religious institutions do play a very large role in the lives and well-being of people in society, and in the lives of children specifically. They're places of worship, of play, of socialisation. They're looked after soup kitchens and homeless shelters, schools and after-school care. Extracurricular activities were held in their halls. They played a very important role in society.
Would you like me to read some statistics, Holly?
Yes.
As of May 31st, 2017, 15,249 people contacted the Royal Commission with their stories. 7,382 concerned religious institutions. 2,489 concerned abuse at the hands of members of the Catholic Church. The next highest, the Anglican Church, only had 594 reported survivors.
The Catholic Church went through its records for the commission and pulled out 4,444 claims against members of the congregation between the 1st of January 1980 and the 28th of February 2015. That wasn't even including the sexual 70s.
Yeah.
I'm just going to call them that because fuck them. The majority of victims of religious sexual abuse were male. The average age when the assault started over all religious institutions was 10.3 years old. But the Catholic perpetrators attacked boys with an average age of 11.6 years. Girls' abuse started about 10 and a half. Abuse most commonly happened in the 70s with an average duration of 2.4 years. It took victims an average of 33 years to report what happened to them.
When we go into Detective Ryan and his story, you'll see why.
10.6% of cases reported were of Aboriginal children, and a vast majority of them were from before 1990. Most of these cases examined were parts of missions and part of the Stolen Generations. Only 3.2% of victims came from a diverse background, mostly immigrants being held in religious housing before properly settling in Australia. And 3% of all victims suffered some kind of disability at the time of the abuse, be it cognitive, physical, sensory, or psychosocial.
95.3% of victims were assaulted by an adult male, 6.4% were assaulted by an adult female, and 2.3% was assaulted by both. 52.9% of perps were part of the senior ministry, 23.2% were teachers, 13% were care workers, and the other 10.9% were volunteers, housemasters, and foster carers.
As a result of all the reports filed with them, the Royal Commission ended up making 2,252 referrals of cases to the police who took up the investigations.
And that is where we're going to leave it. So you consider that a primer for the next two episodes where we're going to look at two specific horrendous cases. We're going to talk about the heroes who managed to help bring those cases to the public. We're going to talk about the victims who are also heroes in their own right for coming forward. And we are absolutely going to demolish the bastards who helped make it happen.
Rail the shit out of those pricks.
Yes. So this is, as we said at the top of this podcast, these are important stories. They can't be forgotten. That's why we're talking about them. Sometimes people say, hey, it's weird subject matter that you're picking there. That's not quite weird crap in Australia.
It's crap. It's crap, in Australia.
And you know what? It's really weird when an organization that is based on some pretty good teachings of Jesus Christ turns into one of the most corrupt, disgusting organizations that this planet has seen.
The biggest pedophile ring on the planet.
And I might also add, has never really apologized for it.
Why would they?
You know,
they got their money.
So we're going to talk about that going forward. Like I said, we're going to examine two specific cases. Thank you for joining us on this journey, because I know it's hard to listen to, but it's really important, especially at the moment where religious institutions are saying that they're being victimized. Remember, this report only came out in 2017.
Please try not to laugh until you feel sick. It's not good for you. Laughing at them because they think they're victims.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying there. Sorry, I got confused.
I was going to break in halfway through the sentence, yep, but I forgot I'd let you finish.
Your phrasing confused me. And if you love Angry Matthew, you're going to get so much of that over the next two episodes. But as I said at the head of the podcast, I'm not against religion. I'm not against religious people. I'm not against religious practice. I am against institutional abuse and cover-ups and conspiracy and hurting children. And I think everyone is. I think my good Catholic friends would definitely agree with that sentiment. Anyway, we will leave it there. Don't forget to to check us out on the social medias if you'd like to get in touch with us about anything. We've had some amazing conversations over the last few weeks. So I'd just like to say on behalf of Holly and myself, if you have contacted us, it's been great to hear from everyone. The other thing as well, I know everyone's doing it tough right now under the second wave of Australian lockdowns.
Third, fourth, fifth, which one are we up to? Where are we living?
I don't know. I have no idea. A lot of people have been talking to us. A lot of people have been reaching out. You know, hey, if a kind word from us helps get you through this fuck situation that we all find ourselves in yet again, reach out. You know, we're always happy to hear from you. And you can do that. You can shoot us a message via the Facebook page, Weird Crap in Australia. Same as Instagram. You can find me lurking around on Twitter. The handle is at Weird Crap in Oz, A-U-S. Or you can just shoot us an old-fashioned email to weirdcrapinaustralia@gmail.com. Don't forget...
I like the fact that email is now the old-fashioned way.
It is old-fashioned. It's the old-fashioned way of communication, digital communication. It's nearly like the dinosaur of snail mail. Don't forget as well, you can help continue what we do here at Weird Crap in Australia by following us on Patreon. I'm very excited to announce that the first book that we ever did, Weird Crap in Australia Volume 1, is now going to be delivered to our Patreon fans first, week by week, chapter by chapter, all for $5 a month. And that also includes the bonus minisode and the podcast you're listening to right now, completely ad-free. So for only $5 a month, get a bonus minisode, you get a chapter of the audiobook, and you get this ad-free. All exciting things. Just for $5. That money, of course, does not go into our pockets. It goes in basically to continue the mission. The mission is to document as much Australian history as we can. As
before someone overwrites it.
Yeah, before it disappears. Because we need to keep these stories alive. All these stories that we've covered over the years. Need to keep that stuff going. And don't forget, I do promise you, after this series ends, we've got a happy one coming.
We're
going
to leave the Australian,
that.
The shitty Australian history. We're going to leave it for a little bit, and we're going to go back to bush rangers and monsters and aliens and the fun stuff.
Yeah, yeah. We'll put in some more. Like, Priscilla was meant to be a lot more fun than parts of it turned out. It was fun.
Just watching it was fun.
Wasn't as fun as it could have been. So, yeah, I promise we've got some fun ones coming up as well. We like to punctuate it, remember? We make you feel like shit, and then we try and lift you up a little bit, and then we do it again.
The problem is that the feel like shit ones are now 3 episodes long
I don't think our listeners realize this, but you're in an abusive relationship with us.
Carrot, 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 stick.
Yeah. Like I said, Weird Crap in Australia Volume 2 is now available for pre-order at Impact Comics, and you can find those guys at impactcomics.com.au. Don't forget as well, Weird Crap in Australia Volume 1, you can also get it from those guys. You can also find it at lulu.com for the printed edition, lulu.com, and you can find it digitally on amazon.com as well. You can get it on your Kindle. So make sure you catch up before Volume 2 comes your way. And if you want to get some merch as well, don't forget Weird Crap in Oz, aus.redbubble.com. Grab yourself a t-shirt, grab yourself a coaster, grab yourself a glass or a mug, put them all together. That's a good time out. Anyway, as is customary, we hand over the few final words to Holly.
I think we need to start a church fair. I really do like the idea of the religious fair.
Yeah. Reach out to us, religious folks. We'll help you set
up
your
religious
fair.
We'll hire a hall and we'll get some tables together and be good.
That sounds like more work than I'm prepared to do, to be fucking honest with you.
No, we just set that up and then they go set up the rest of it.
Sure. Why not? A religious job fair. I like it. Well, that's it for Weird Crap in Australia for this week, folks. Don't forget, we have more weirdness coming up for you very, very soon. But bye for now.
See yous.
The Weird Crap in Australia podcast is hosted and produced by Holly and Matthew Soule. Our editor is Blake Kell. Weird Crap in Australia is a production of The Modern Meltdown.